Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 40, Pressure. Working in the NHS can be a very pressurised environment. This is particularly true at the moment, as I record this in the middle of the second wave of the COVID pandemic. But it's not just a pandemic that makes it pressurised. In recent years, there's been a lot of talk of resilience and the need for resilience training. Whilst I feel this resilience and resilience training has good intentions, I can't help but think that this pushes the blame for the pressure back onto the constituent individuals, the members of staff working in the system, rather than looking at the system itself and the changes that may need to be made. Obstetrics and gynaecology is no exception to this, and in fact features highly as a specialty where immense pressure is encountered. As a specialty, the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists have quoted a 30% dropout rate during specialty training. Burnout, defined as a syndrome of emotional exhaustion, cynicism, depersonalisation and reduced feelings of personal accomplishment in relation to work, is said to contribute to this. I can't help but feel worried about this figure. That means that 30% of our young doctors who competed to go into specialty training, who thought that obstetrics and gynaecology was for them, have dropped out. That's a huge number. That means we're running a training system and a service in which only 2/3 of doctors are willing to continue working. And when you read about burnout, that emotional exhaustion, cynicism, depersonalisation that I've just mentioned, is it any wonder that that may have an impact on the women we look after? A 2019 study into the prevalence of burnout amongst UK obstetricians and gynaecologists was conducted by Imperial College London and supported by the RCOG. This found that just under half of trainees and a third of consultants and specialist doctors suffer from burnout. The study found that burnout was associated with increasingly defensive medical practice, with a negative impact on the physical and mental well-being of those doctors, strongly associated with depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts. This has clear implications for the retention of doctors, the health and well-being of doctors, as well as the efficiency and sustainability of the obstetrics and gynaecology workforce. The colleges looked at this to look at how one might continue to retain doctors in the workforce and how you might use their experience at the end of their careers, allowing them to wind down rather than working them into the ground and then abruptly retiring when they're spent. Don't get me wrong, many of us find great joy in our jobs. I've talked in other episodes about the pleasure of being involved in the start of a new life and supporting women and their families in that transition to parenthood. There is much joy, but it is a very high pressure, difficult job to do. And it's not the specialty itself necessarily, but it may be the system in which we're working. we may have a shortage of suitable staff, either because we can't recruit, because in our area it's not a popular place to work, or because there are insufficient trained staff nationally. We know there are national shortages in some specific disciplines, and midwives are no exception. We may have very restrictive bureaucracy when we want to get something done. It may be very difficult. Or it may be that we're working in a system where we feel we don't have sufficient time to talk to the women we're looking after. Working in the NHS, we have a tendency to treat our jobs as a vocation. A lot of people working in the NHS are more motivated by the altruism rather than money and status. The very act of wanting to care for others and the desire to be valued for that leads us to be vulnerable to a hard-pressed system. We often have a massive, genuine sense of loyalty to the NHS. It's almost like a second family to many of us. For me, the NHS has shaped my entire life, every milestone. I'm married at the end of my house jobs, when it was convenient to do so, and my husband and I could live in the same place. I got pregnant with my first child when I'd got a training rotation and knew I had some job security for the next few years. I had my second child after I passed my part two membership of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists and knew that I didn't have to take another professional exam again. I've spent most of my life devoted to the NHS, devoted to the hospital, devoted to the department. Many people in the NHS celebrate long service milestones. It would have been my 25th milestone during the COVID pandemic. Often our trust has a tea party, a celebration of people who've worked in the NHS for 25, 30, 35 and 40 years. Obviously that didn't happen, and it seems trivial and rather unnecessary to have some formal recognition. But this is because traditionally people have worked for a very long time. We don't chop and change our careers and jobs in the same way as people do in some other organisations or careers. As our organisation demands more and more from us, we can work ourselves harder and harder, doing more and more with less. Many of us in the NHS are aware that every year there are budget cuts. Every year we're asked to do more work for less money. Not less money for us, that might say stable, but rarely increasing with inflation. But we may be asked to see more patients in a certain time frame because this will earn the hospital more income, or to make do with cheaper pieces of equipment, or for pieces of equipment to be replaced slightly less regularly, or for us to share pieces of equipment because we don't have quite enough. We end up doing more and more, perhaps working later and later, not taking our breaks, staying after hours, because we should, because we feel guilty if we don't, and because we feel responsible for letting people down, whether that be the patients we're looking after or our professional colleagues. We can completely lose sight of the common sense and sanity, realistic expectations of what we can achieve and what we can't. This can lead to presentism. This is where we adopt the superhero approach. We come into work despite being ill because we see ourselves as irreplaceable and unable to let others down. Most of my colleagues have not had a day sick ever in their entire career. It's not unusual to turn up to the labour ward and find a colleague with a heavy cold or even a temperature, dosing themselves up and carrying on. There's continuous pressure to do the extra shift or to turn up and do your job. I remember feeling extremely guilty at one point in my career when I was on call on Easter Sunday and running a high temperature and having a vomiting bug. I had to cry off and let down a colleague. I bought him a bottle of wine to make up for it, for the fact that he had to do the on-call on his own. It just wasn't possible to get a locum that late in the day. But I felt guilty. And to some extent, I still do. Why is it that maybe 15, 17 years on, I can still remember that as a clear point when I let someone down and I put myself first? That shouldn't be that unusual. We also get pressurized to take on extra shifts when someone is ill. There's a constant emailing, texting or WhatsApping. Can anyone cover this shift, that shift? So-and-so's ill. Who's going to fill in? Pressure to fill in for a colleague. Cancel plans. Work coming first and foremost. I experienced this difficulty very early on in my career. During my house jobs, now known as Foundation Programme, we were in pairs. My fellow house officer was unwell. The two of us were working on a urology firm. We admitted 17 to 20 patients a day on a busy day. She was unwell, genuinely unwell, for nearly 8 weeks of a 6 month post. She didn't go off to start off with. Obviously, she wouldn't. She wanted to support me. She didn't want to let the team down. It was only when she nearly threw up on the ward that she was sent home and then had a series of investigations because she had something quite significantly wrong that needed treatment. So she was off. I don't know if it wasn't possible to get a locum or whether they just didn't get a locum. I was left to carry on doing the job of two people, clerking and admitting 17 to 20 patients a day with no support. I considered myself lucky because I didn't have to do the extra on calls. The extra on calls had been farmed out to a bigger group of doctors. But I did have to cover the ward, which was normally two people's job, on my own. I carried on for many weeks until I was completely ground down on my knees. The career I'd aspired to through school, teenage years and medical school had transformed into something else entirely and I just couldn't cope. I thought I should give up medicine. I thought I just couldn't cut it as a doctor. I couldn't hack it. I thought I needed to give up. I burst into tears in the sluice. Interestingly, it wasn't the young, jolly, approachable consultant who came to my rescue. It was the old timer, old school, quite withdrawn. He called me into his office, told me, go home, take a long weekend. And in his wisdom, he told me, never take a major decision about your career when you're upset. Get some sleep, get some rest, get away from the hospital. I've got this covered. Then think about whether medicine is still the career for you. I remember his kindness. I could easily have given up, but I didn't. And I look back now, many, many years later, with considerable gratitude. In the last few years, there's been a lot of work into safety culture. And the MAT Neo QI programme, a quality improvement programme in maternity and neonatal care, performed a safety culture survey. Interestingly, this was the first time in my career I'd ever been asked questions about feeling burnt out, exhausted, missing meals, my sense of frustration. And the report they published in 2019 makes very interesting reading. Worryingly, 35 to 50% of staff replied positively to the statement, "I feel burned out by my work," the highest percentage being those working in obstetric units. I don't know what the levels are like in other healthcare settings or in other company cultures, but surely that can't be good. Up to half the workforce saying they feel burned out. A midwife at work lent me Amity Reid's book, Overdue. It's a compelling read and an all too familiar account of a person with the right aspirations of wanting to deliver person-centered care, being completely eroded away and crushed by the system. It was a difficult read for me because I saw a lot of her in myself, my experiences. There have been very difficult times in my career, and I have experienced burnout, significant burnout, myself. And only when I was in that place did I find other doctors similarly affected, a hidden cohort of those of us ashamed to say it had got too much for us. And I will talk about that in more depth in a future podcast, but I'm not sure I'm quite ready to do so just yet. So I work in a system where people start with good intentions. They enter healthcare because they very much want to care for, look after, and interact with people. We enter young, enthusiastic, wanting to change the world, and sometimes find ourselves in a system that just isn't ready for us. The massive inertia to change, the bureaucracy, the difficulties we encounter of what it's really like to work in the NHS can be insurmountable. Another laudable initiative alongside resilience training is the six C's. The six C's stand for care, compassion, courage, communication, commitment, and competence. These were drawn up as a central plank of compassion in practice by the NHS England Chief Nursing Officer, Jane Cummings, and launched in December 2012. Six core values. But the very fact that we have to say care, compassion, communication, how could we possibly work in a healthcare system in which that wasn't taken for granted? How could we work in a system where these attributes need emphasis? How can we work in a system where people are unable to express compassion, care, and communication because they are working so hard or in such conditions that they experience the burnout I described at the beginning, emotionally exhausting, cynicism? It shouldn't need to be said, the six C's. So whilst it's an excellent initiative, I can't help think that resilience training and the six C's and the MAT-NEO QI safety culture survey are an indication that perhaps there's something wrong. Perhaps the system needs to change, not the individuals within it. Easy to say, hard to do. I know from experience, sticking my head above the parapet, leading and trying to change is laudable but difficult. And I know many people, good people, for whom in the end it's been just too much. Let's end with the zesty bit. We need to take care of ourselves before we can take care of others. Not a cosmetic sticking plaster of staff wellbeing services, but a genuine sense of value, valuing your staff and valuing yourself. That means proper staffing, time for training, treating people humanely, how you would wish to be treated, being involved in decisions about rotas and not continually pressurised to do extra work. Be realistic about the contribution you can make and the part that work plays in your life. Make sure you keep balance and that work does not become the be-all and the end-all. And most importantly, never make a major decision when you're stressed and upset. Try and walk away. Give yourself time to cool down. Allow yourself to think straight. If you're a pregnant woman, having a baby, don't be fearful. The person in front of you will genuinely want to look after you. That's why we've gone into the careers we have. The odd small gesture. Thank you when we do something. A partner offering us a cup of coffee or tea when they've gone off to the cafe to buy one for themselves. Knowing that although you have a midwife looking after you throughout your labour, they will need to go and take a meal break or a drink break at some point in that 12-hour shift. Be tolerant and understanding, and know that when they come back, refreshed, they'll be in a much better place to carry on looking after you than if they'd never gone at all. Be tolerant. When we can't get to you immediately, answer your buzzer or give you an explanation as to why you're waiting in our clinic. Understand we are doing our level best, doing our best to look after you and for the other women that we're also looking after at that point in time. When we get to you, we will give you our full attention. We will not rush you. We will listen. We will deal with your concerns. We will reassure you and care for you. But be patient with us. It's not easy to multitask, deal with competing priorities. We are people too. To end today's episode, I'm going to finish with a poem that I wrote during lockdown in 2020. Ordinary people, just ordinary people, don't you see? Daughter, sister, wife, mother, that's me. Caring for people every day. Profession, vocation, call it what you may. Taken for granted for so many years. Sweat, toil, heartache, and tears. Long hours at work for decades. Suddenly valued and seen for what we bring. To society, the benefits apparent this spring. Skeptics among us know it won't last. Already, so quickly, we're slipping back into the past. Don't let's become invisible once more. Stand up for us, with us, once and for all. Remember the heroes that carried you through. are ordinary people like me and you. I do hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the OBS Pod. Feel free to contact me on Twitter at FWMaternity or at the OBS Pod to ask me questions, give me topics for future episodes, or let me know what you think. It's absolutely fantastic when you get in touch. I really enjoy reading your comments. As usual, I've tried to include in the programme notes some extra reading about this particular topic, both for professionals working in maternity care and for pregnant women using services. I'd like to reassure you that although I'm talking about my experiences working in maternity care, I take confidentiality very seriously and do not give any personal information about any of my patients. If you've enjoyed listening, I'd love you to recommend the OBS Pod to friends or colleagues, and please do leave me a review on whichever podcast directory you find my episodes. Many thanks for listening.